It's a theme which really arose out of the discussions of the Holy Father and Archbishop Rowan Williams when they met in Rome, and very much relate to issues that are affecting the Anglican Communion at the moment. Discussions on what makes the church, on how individual churches relate to the wider communion. And so the main topic of conversation is about communion, communion at the universal and local level. This is an issue which is very germane to what is happening within the Anglican Communion, and as with all the archic and other ecumenical dialogues, is something that can really contribute to that communion's understanding of how it should go forward.
Beyond that, though, you're looking also at how this relates to the very pressing ethical questions that both churches are facing.
Yes, inevitably, those are very much part of the scene that we'll be looking at. But, I mean, I'd have to say that we are not simply diving in and talking about those, as they're called, hot-button issues. We're trying to go behind them and see really where those differences arise. This goes back to the nature of ecumenical dialogue in itself, where we begin by stressing what we have in common, finding an area that we can both profess together, and then moving forward from that to finding where and when and why we diverge. That's a more productive and creative way of addressing our issues. If we simply dive in and talk about the controversial issues as they are, people tend to entrench, they tend to state set positions, and we really don't get anywhere. The great thing about ecumenical dialogue is that it tries to go behind these issues and find out if we can see what is underneath them, what lies behind that we can share in common. And this provides a way that we can move forward.
So what kind of expectations do you have for this new phase? I mean, it's true to say that many people tend to look at the Anglican Communion and say, well, they've got all sorts of problems, they're going to have to resolve them before we can resume our ecumenical conversation.
Ecumenical conversation is not just about discussing things when we've got things sorted out. Ecumenical conversation is very much about discerning the will of God through the Holy Spirit for us here and now. And at this time, which is a difficult time, it's perhaps more important than ever that we both try and listen out to the will of God for the church. What we're always saying is that ecumenism is not a work of human hands. It is actually the desire of God, the prayer of our Lord for his church. We're trying to clear away some of the clouds of human misapprehension so that we can understand more fully the will of God for his church. In that light, we must always work, and perhaps even more work when times are difficult, at trying to come together, to proclaim the gospel together, to discern God's will for his church together. So, to answer your question, it's very hard to say what our expectations for outcomes are. That's in the hands of God. What I do think it is extremely important that we do is come together and talk at this difficult time to affirm what we have in common, and affirm our belief that the Lord is calling us together, eventually in corporate unity.
The meeting will be taking place in a particularly appropriate ecumenical setting, won't it?
The Monastery of Beausset is a wonderful setting to hold our particular dialogue. It is an ecumenical monastery. Somebody said it's a bit like Taizé with doctoral degrees. It's a very evocative place, and it's extremely well known both to Roman Catholics and to Anglicans. At the last Lambeth conference, the Monastery of Beausset sent a representative at the particular request of the Archbishop of Canterbury. And so it's a place that will be familiar to both our traditions and a very welcoming place. The prior has already made it clear how much they're looking forward to hosting this first meeting of the third phase. It's also a very evocative, very beautiful place that will provide the tranquility and the space for some very serious talking.
And the meeting goes on for 10 days, doesn't it? Can you tell us a little bit about the way the talks proceed?
It's a long meeting because people come a long way and there's an importance in the themes that we're discussing. I think, as with previous dialogue meetings, it's a little bit top-loaded in that in the first few days we will be following quite a strict programme, looking at how the dialogue is to unfold, what our expectations are, laying down the ground rules, getting to know each other a little bit, and introducing the members of the dialogue to the history of ARCIC and to the issues that we're going to discuss. The second half of those 10 days is a little bit less planned because we feel that themes will emerge during those first 5 days, that directions that we want to follow, particular questions we want to look at, things that we want to perhaps deepen our understanding of will arise. And so as the dialogue goes on in the latter half, I think there will be a full programme, but it will emerge as the programme progresses.
This, you say, is the first meeting of the third phase. Just recap in a few sentences, if you can, for us, the first and second phase, and also how this will then progress, how long, perhaps, this third phase is expected to last.
It's the third phase of a continuing dialogue. So though we call it ARCIC 3, the Anglican Roman Catholic International Commission 3, there's actually only ever been one ARCIC dialogue in three phases. The first two phases produced a range of agreed statements on a variety of topics that are of interest between the two traditions. The agreed statements on the Eucharist and ministry have been officially received by both the Anglican Communion and the Roman Catholic Church, and so have a certain standing in the history of the dialogues. They're a very important way of assessing the relationship between the two traditions over the last 40 years. We don't know how long ARCIC 3 will last. It really depends on how the discussions go. Other things arise, other issues come up, other events befall the two traditions, and so in a sense we see what happens. But we do know that we're committed to being there as long as it takes.
The other question, I suppose, is how much is this work that you're doing going to be received by the rest of the church? As you say, the documents are then presented to the churches, aren't they? How easy is it to make this work really the work of the whole church?
It's a very important question. Ecumenical dialogues like ARCIC have never seen that they're an end in themselves or that they're the whole of ecumenism. They've only ever seen themselves as part of a much bigger process, which involves reception at grassroots level, parishes, schools, communities, at a leadership level, bishops coming together, at the way that the two churches work and pray together. And ARCIC is very aware, perhaps more aware than ever, that these dialogues that take place need to be complemented and take place within a context of other things going on. When the Holy Father was in Great Britain, he set a programme before all the Christian communities there of working together to bring the gospel into the social, political discourse of the nation. That's ecumenism as well. And so we're aware that our documents, whatever we produce, need in a sense to be fed into that wider context. We need to produce them in a format that can be discussed, received at all kinds of levels by bishops, by leaders, but also by ordinary Christians of both traditions.
In the Anglican Catholic world, the situation is slightly complicated now by the setting up of the new ordinariate for former Anglicans, now Catholic, some of them Catholic priests. Is this likely to affect the work of your next phase of the ARCIC dialogue?
We've always said that the path of traditional ecumenical dialogue is a different path from that of individual or group conversion. The Vatican Council itself makes that clear in its document on ecumenism. And so we don't see our work lying within that framework of the ordinariate. It's a different issue. Our work is to stress the traditional relationship between the two traditions, between Anglicans and Roman Catholics, that has been expressed over 40 years in ARCIC. And so, though the ordinariate is an extremely important aspect of the landscape and the relationships between the two churches, it won't in itself be something that comes into our discussions.
of the talk about the Ordinariate has been speculation and not based on what's actually going ahead. And I'm trusting that it's not going to affect the climate very much at the talks themselves.
Alison Barnett-Cowan heads the Office for Unity, Faith and Order at the London-based Anglican Communion Office, and she'll also serve as the other co-secretary for the forthcoming Arctic talks. I contacted her to find out more about the mood in the Anglican world ahead of this new and crucial stage of the dialogue.
I think the expectations are quite high because there's been a lot of talk about Anglican-Roman Catholic relations in the media over the last year, and this is an opportunity for the official theological dialogue to get to work on the important questions that are between us at the moment.
Tell us something about the theme, what you think will be the most important issues on the table at this meeting.
Well, at this first meeting, I don't suppose we'll get too far other than planning the agenda for the way ahead for the next 10 years. It'll be a matter of building community and trust in one another, surveying the work that was done in Arctic 1 and Arctic 2, and establishing the platform on which these talks will be held. The topics, of course, are ecclesiology and ethics, that is, the relationship between the local and the universal church, and how the local and universal church together discern right ethical teaching. And those are both very lively topics in both of our communions right now.
As you say, there has been a lot about Anglican-Catholic relations in the media, and not all of it very positive, particularly regarding the difficulties created by the new Ordinariate. How is that likely to affect the climate, if you like, the atmosphere at these talks, do you think?
I'm trusting that it's not going to affect the climate very much at the talks themselves. Much of the talk about the Ordinariate has been speculation and not based on what's actually going ahead. And the Ordinariate per se is not actually the topic for the theological dialogue. We will have an opportunity on one of the evenings informally to update everyone on what's actually going on. And at this stage, that ball is really in the court of the Episcopal conferences and their discussions with local Anglicans about how the Ordinariate will be put into place. So I think we can probably note that, but put it on the shelf and get on with the work that's to be done between us.
Tell us something about the selection of the people who will be taking part, who will be representing the Anglican Communion for these talks.
Right. For the Anglican way of finding people was to write to the primates of the provinces of the Anglican Communion, and based on the nominations we received, we tried to get a good balance of skills, particularly around the discussion of ecclesiology and the question of ethics. There's not necessarily too many people who do both of those, so it was to make sure we had a balance of each. We wanted some continuity with Arctic 2, and so there's a member and a consultant who were part of that. We wanted to make sure we had some women and some laity represented. I'm a little disappointed we didn't have a better geographical distribution, and that's really because we just didn't receive very many nominations from what's popularly called the Global South. We do have a bishop from Southern Africa, and we have a theologian from Singapore. But I'm sorry we didn't have any nominations, for example, from Latin America.
There is, of course, the question of the difficulties and the divisions within the Anglican Communion at the moment. How much is this affecting, perhaps, the difficulties overshadowing, in a way, the lead-up to these talks?
Well, I'm not sure the difficulties surrounding the talks. I think what will be interesting in the talks is that those the varieties of views will be represented within the Anglican team, and so it will be interesting to see how the team will work together. But we're not particularly afraid of sharing with Roman Catholics the fact that there are lively and divisive questions among us. I think that's part of our ecumenical obligation, is to talk about who we are honestly with our ecumenical partners.
Thanks there to Alison Barnett-Cowan, head of Unity, Faith and Order at the London-based Anglican Communion Office. And earlier you heard Monsignor Mark Langham of the Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity.